Hello, welcome to Growing Wild. I'm Charlotte Petz and this is Radio Reverb, online, on digital and on 97.2 FM. Coming up on today's show, we go out for a winter bird walk with Nick Lear in some Sussex woodland. I have a talk with Sam St. Pierre of the Ouse and Arder River Trust about a recent serious river pollution incident. And our resident gardener Sophie joins us for some winter gardening advice. But before all that, we'll have a song, and it's the Beatles' Twist and Shout. Love that song, Twist and Shout by the Beatles. Our first section of the show on Growing Wild this month, we have Nick Lear, who is a keen twitcher, ornithologist. He's got some woodland out near where I live in East Sussex, and he has managed this woodland in such a way that he likes to very much encourage wildlife and birds, and yes, he's very creature friendly. So I wanted to go out for a walk with him to see what we could hear, even though it's in the middle of winter, to know what we can is still around and what bird song we can identify. I'm very much inspired by Winter Watch that's been on all of last week on BBC, and the RSPB Big Garden Bird Watch, which has been happening over this weekend. And they were encouraging us to get out there just for an hour in our gardens and record all of the birds that we could recognise, and then they can create a nationwide survey and try and get a grip on the numbers that we've got of all of the birds and which species are more prevalent this year and which aren't. So it's a great thing. It's probably a bit late in the day now, but you may still be able to download a pack and have a look what it was all about if you check out the RSPB website. So this is me and Nick going out for a little walk and having a listen in to the birds that we could hear in the trees.
Great spotted woodpecker. That's its territorial call. Uses its beak. Just here, you can hear some tits and a robin.
That one's so clear, isn't it? So distinctive.
Sings generally three or four calls. It's two woodpeckers.
How many varieties would you expect to hear on average this time of year in this area?
A dozen. Blue-tip here now.
And are these territorial songs?
No, these blue-tits are in a group and they'll be mixing with other birds and they're going around. They use the company for protection. If a hawk comes, they'll all start making a certain noise which says hawk, and they protect each other that way. And that's a goldcrest, I think. You never stop goldcrests.
Goldcrest.
Yeah, they know. They're very often found in mixed flocks with blue tits, great tits, cold tits, nuthatches, tree creepers, all together. And if we're exceptionally lucky, a lesser spotted woodpecker. Oh, that's a green woodpecker. Did you hear it?
The whoop 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 whoop. That's a woodpecker.
Green woodpecker. Laughing, they call it.
It does sound like they're laughing.
I think there's a great tit up there. Can you hear the more strident note? That.
Ah.
I think that's a great tit. Great tits make a lot of different noises, and so if you hear a noise you've never heard before, it really will be great.
Is there a favoured environment for them? Do different trees make a difference as to what's around, or...?
Well, I think they like the... There's quite a variety of trees in this world. Big variety of species. There are more than 20 species of native trees here. And that's a very favourable environment for all sorts of different insects, different times of year. And that means that these blue tits and all the other birds in this mixed flock, they can go around. They probably have a route which they go around again and again, and they're picking up food, little insects and stuff from the top of the branches.
Is there anything here that isn't very common, or would people be able to hear this sort of thing in any wood?
I think so. What we've heard so far.
Yeah.
I mean, we might have got more of them, perhaps, than some. I try and manage the wood in such a way as to encourage wildlife generally. And it seems to be working.
What are the methods of doing that?
Well, what we're doing is coppicing. So this was cut about 6-7 years ago, and then the regrowth is as you see it, and it provides habitat for birds to nest, for instance. In the spring we get warblers coming from Africa, and this is where they nest.
Sort of scrublands, brambles and lower lying.
Yeah.
Quite dense.
Whereas you've got a variety of by cutting some every year, you've always got some which is 2 years old and some which is 4 years old and so on and so on. And it provides habitat for different birds and animals. Try and leave standing dead wood. And it's providing a home for all those insects, and they're providing food for birds like nuthatches and woodpeckers. And something like that, which is a bit of hornbeam that's fallen, again it provides habitat for insects and fungi. And, you know, that section there with whole will be an environment for something, and then there where it's lying down on the ground, it'll be an environment for something else.
So it's really very important not to be too tidy.
That's my view. Okay. Not everybody's view. But yes, I don't tidy up those dead bits.
Oh, wow.
Field fairs.
Field fair? I've not heard of a field fair.
Well, they're winter visitors, and they're normally here all through the winter. And extraordinarily, what's the date today? 24th of January?
Yes.
And the first I've seen, I've been looking out for them since the 1st of January. You can hear that. That's field fair, this one. The field fairs are a bit bigger than the Red Wings. And the Red Wings have this is a party. They're on the move because they're migratory birds. That's the field fairs. And the Red Wings, when they get into a big party, which is a few here, there's a crow.
Yeah.
They have a kind of little whistle. Whistly noise.
It's quite common for them to hang out together, the Red Wings.
Yes, yeah. Normally together.
There's lots of them. There's going to be about 10, 15 flying into that oak tree and then swooping along the ground. Starlings as well.
Yeah, the starlings, which quite often go. I don't know if you can see through the binoculars.
This isn't my forte.
No, there's quite a party of birds on the ground.
Oh, I can see them. Oh, wow.
Which I hadn't realised. So they've been dropping in and they're feeding on the ground. And you've got starlings and redwings there, and probably field fairs as well. Field fairs have a grey rump. There's a lot of field fairs there.
And where have they come in from? They're not native.
Sweden. They nest in... I think they do nest a little bit in Scotland, maybe, but mostly they nest in Sweden and Northern Europe. So by the end of March, they'll be gone.
We're getting a lot of movement, not much chatter. It's gone up into that other tree.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. It's made my day. I think it's a jay. Quite the right noise. Jay. teacher. The great male has a thick black stripe and the female has a thinner black stripe. Not very obvious, but it's the males that sing.
How did you learn this? Were you taught?
Well, I think because I was always interested in birds and watching them, and then I realised that you see so much more if you start to listen. And so I suppose what I did is start to... every time I heard a bird, I wasn't sure. I would spend some time making sure I could see it, and then gradually you learn what the song of that bird is. Supposing it's a chaffinch, they're always singing the same way.
Right.
And you knock them off one by one until now, if I'm in the wood and I hear a sound that I'm not familiar with, I know straight away that it's unfamiliar. Then I'm going to some trouble to make sure I find out what it is. It's usually a great tip.
Nick Lear with me there. Such a knowledgeable chap about all of that sort of thing. It was a real pleasure to go out with him. And it's quite easy. And that what he said at the end there about identifying the bird, so following the bird song until you can see the bird and then looking up what that bird is and then correlating the two things, that does seem to be the best way to try and learn. Whereas I've always just tried to pick out bird song and try and know what it is. But because they do vary their song so much, then it is quite hard to learn just by the song. So if you hear one, try and find the bird, identify what the bird is, and then you'll get a better idea what the song is, which is rather lovely. And as I said just before I played that piece out, the RSBP have been running the Big Garden Birdwatch. So do have a look at their website and see if you're still able to do that, because I think that'd be quite a lovely thing to be a part of. Okay, let's have a song and then we'll be back with the Uzinada River Trust. This is the Birds, of course. Turn, turn, turn. Was the Birds and Turn, Turn, Turn. This is Growing Wild on Radio Reverb. I'm Charlotte Petz and we are now happily sponsored by Infinity Foods. I'm hoping to get them on next month to talk more about what they're all about and their reasons for sponsoring the show and things like that. But next up we have Sam St. Pierre of the Uzinada Rivers Trust. A Rivers Trust is an organisation that is there to protect the environment of the local river and its tributaries and other freshwater bodies. And their remit is the River Ouse and the River Arda. And there was an incident last year, at the end of last year, sort of the end of November, and Sam was alerted to this by a fellow member of the trust. And here he is describing the stream in which a lot of cow slurry had been dumped into by Plumpton College.
It's a beautiful little stream. It's very clear water running over gravel, and supports, or did support, a big population of brown trout and certain other fish, particularly bullheads, which are an internationally threatened species. And they phoned me up early in the morning of the 30th of November to say that the stream was stinking, to put it mildly. In fact, it was the smell that woke the owner up. And the water in the stream was almost black, and there were mountains of foam, dirty foam, on it. And he knew there was something wrong, so he rang the agency, the Environment Agency, immediately. What had occurred was a whole load of cow slurry from Plumpton College precincts, their farm, had been let out onto a field in the middle of the night for some reason or other. The field was frozen solid. The temperature was about -4, -5, and it just ran straight across the field and into the stream. Now, what this did was to kill every fish in that stream, right down to its confluence with the Bevan stream, of which it is a tributary, and pretty well all the fish in the Bevan stream, right down to the River Ouse.
Wow, so all habitation within that just gone.
Just wiped out. And the Environment Agency classified this as a Category 1 pollution, which is the most serious. They have Categories 1, 2 and 3. The Environment Agency moved in very quickly, but there wasn't an awful lot they could do in the Plumpton Mill Stream itself, because they reckoned that there was about 200,000 litres of slurry had gone in, and the pollution slick, in other words, it's, you know, from the bottom end to the top end, was about a kilometre long. They couldn't stop it, but they tried to do some repair damage on the Bevan stream by oxygenating the water. And as the slick moved down the Bevan stream, they moved with it. And when it got to the lower end of the Bevan, they were pumping it out into fields to try and stop it actually getting into the River Ouse.
Mm. And was that successful?
Yes, yes. By the time it got to the Ouse, there was very little ammonia.
And it's the ammonia that's the key thing?
Ammonia principally, but of course you get big oxygen depletion with slurry because it absorbs all the oxygen out of the water. And you also get other poisons like hydrogen sulfide. So oxygenating the water could only deal with a bit of the problem. It was the poisonous of the water that was killing the fish.
Mm. And that's instant, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Fairly. I mean, they die in a very short time.
Mm.
And they were just fishing out dead fish. They found 1,200. But for every one you find, there'll be another few you don't find. It was absolutely heartbreaking because there were trout, sea trout, weighing somewhere between 5 and 10 pounds, all ready to spawn.
Mm.
You could see that the females were gorged with eggs, and you could see the milk coming out of the vent of the male. They were all about to spawn, and they were dead. And I saw one trout hooked up on a tree root that was sticking out of the bank, obviously desperately trying to jump out of the way, got hooked up on the tree root and died. It really was heartbreaking.
And is this an isolated incident?
I'm afraid not. The Plumpton College have got a dismal record on this. They have been prosecuted before. They have had warning letters and formal interviews on other occasions. The last prosecution they had to pay the costs I'm not sure if they were actually, I think they were fined a bit, but they were put on a sort of an 18-month probation period, like if you do it again, you're going to be in serious trouble. But this particular incident is by far the worst that I've ever seen. This just wiped everything out.
Mm. And with that, how long will that take to try and rebuild any kind of ecosystem in the river again?
Years, if not decades.
And there's nothing that we can do, human intervention can do to change that. We've just got to allow it to run through.
It's got to clean itself up. You can't. There's nothing you can do to aid that. We've done a lot of work on the Bevan Stream because in the past there was this kind of compulsion to dredge streams, yeah, because this was for land drainage.
Mm.
And so they dredged the streams and scraped all the gravel out and left a clay bottom which eroded even more and ruined the spawning grounds in a lot of places. And we have put a lot of gravels back in the stream and we've been quite successful.
What would you like Plumpton to do? Is there any action they could take that would help this situation?
Or? What would I like them to do? I would like them to get their act together. I would like them to stop polluting the stream with slurry. How they do that is up to them.
Mm.
Whether their herd may be too big and they're producing too much slurry and they don't know what to do with it, so these accidents, in inverted commas, happen. Or whatever. But
do you know how many there have been?
Pollution incidents?
Yeah.
We've counted 10 since 2011. So okay. It's practically every winter.
Okay.
Yeah?
Mm.
Some of these incidents were relatively minor, but you're still putting pollutants into the water. And they're things like sea trout fry are very, very sensitive to pollution. You've only got to have a minor pollution and you can wipe them out, but you can't see them. They're so tiny, so nobody really knows.
Mm.
And we always work on the precautionary principle, you know. If there's any doubt, don't do it. So that's what I would like Plumpton College to do. And I would also like them to change their culture, because they seem to have a flagrant disregard for the aquatic environment, which is a most extraordinary thing, because they actually run a fisheries management course.
Well, there we go. It is true, they do run a fisheries management course. So it was quite a big deal what happened a couple of months ago. It was really bad. That river was trashed, and it was very sad to see these bloated, dead fish just bobbing up to the surface and on the banks of the river. It feels like maybe Plumpton do just need to be held to account a little bit more for that. I do want to get their side across as well. They've released a statement which is on their website. It reads, following the incident on the 29th of November, we have put considerable resource into water quality monitoring and associated farm operations, and they will be releasing a long-term action plan regarding that incident also. However, alongside that statement, there's also a recognition and an admission that they did then pollute again on the 19th of January. It was a far less serious pollution. As Sam said, the one that happened in November was a Category 1, and the one that happened just a couple of weeks ago in mid-January was Category 3. But it was the same thing. It was dirty water runoff. It was cow slurry. So just 3 weeks later, it's happened again. So I am very interested to know what they're going to do to remedy their practices, because it's just not on, it's not okay. And we'll be keeping a close eye on that and seeing what they do to change their behaviours. The OART, the organisation that Sam is a member of, are a charitable organisation, so they're always keen for donations or for members. And you can get it an annual membership for about £15 a year, I think, and they'll send you a newsletter and keep you informed of all of their doings. They generally do lots of good stuff, so you can find them online. If you just Google the Ouse and Arder River Trust, it will come up. And you can find them there and all of the information from there. Okay, let's have a song and then we'll be back with Sophie, our resident gardener. But first, let's have Jimmy Cliff and Many Rivers to Cross. Many Rivers to Cross by Jimmy Cliff. This is Growing Wild. I'm Charlotte Petz and you're listening to Radio Reverb. Okay, next up we've got Sophie, who is our resident gardener, and she came in a couple of days ago and we had a little chat because we finally got a question. About a year ago I put out a request for anyone that's got growing questions or gardening related questions, and we finally got one in. So she came back in and we had a little chat. So I've been joined by Sophie, our resident gardener. I say resident gardener, and it's been a full year since you were on.
Oh, has it? Oh, yeah, it was. Winter. It's when you're scraping the barrel trying for guests. She's not working. It's the winter.
It's premium guest. I think you were on the first show. We're talking about...
Oh, was that the first one?
Seedy Sunday.
Oh, that's right. Yes, with James Wong.
That's right.
Oh, yes.
It's coming up again. It's on February the 5th.
Oh, is it? Yes. Oh, I hadn't checked and I must put it in my diary.
Yeah, are you going to come?
Yeah, definitely. Yes, please.
Great. It's at Basvik this year.
Oh, that's even nearer my house. That's great.
Corn Exchange is being
renovated, of course.
I don't know if James Wong's going to be there.
Oh, well. He's probably got others to go to.
He's usually there, to be fair. He is quite a fan of the CD Sunday. Anyway, so it is January in the garden.
It is.
And it is quiet. And especially we're having a proper winter.
We are. It's not like last year, is it? I think last year we were kind of rushing through the jobs, but this year really...
It was about 20 degrees last year in January.
Oh, absolutely.
And yeah, daffodils were fully up, birds were out, everything.
Yeah, there was baby birds everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. This year
we are having a full winter. So how does... We have actually got the exciting thing is, and this is probably the reason really that you're here, is because I actually had a question.
Oh, fantastic.
A full year ago, I asked people if they had a question that they could ask, and we've had one.
Well, that's good. Somebody's been thinking for a long time, about what the question
that's
could be.
That's quite a good question as well.
Yeah.
So, yes, that we will come to that. Maybe we'll do that now. Let's just do the question, because I think really it answers what we can be doing. The question that we had was around allotments. So Kelly, she's had an allotment. It was her first year of having it last year. And it's quite large. It's 10 by 12 metres.
Full size, yeah.
Full size allotment. So they've had this allotment. They've had it for a year, but it is quite large and it was in quite a poor state. And it's it's very easy to get demoralised. So what can they do this year to help with motivation and to try and get on top of things?
Well, this is a perfect time of year for that. This is the time. I mean, it's difficult at the moment because you can't get, you know, it's hard to get a fork or a spade into the ground. But
it's frozen solid.
It's absolutely frozen solid. But on a nice, you know, on a nice sort of warmer day, maybe after a bit of rain when things have kind of warmed up a bit, this is the time, really. This is the time when you can get really digging. You can get out all those brambles. You can get out the bindweed and any ground elder, anything, any sort of perennial weeds that you've got that you know that you remember were a real trouble last year. And this is the time to do it, because if it's not active, the soil is going to be dormant. You know, everything in the soil is just waiting. And if you can start working on it now, then you can really get rid of some of the stuff and stop it coming back. So I would say digging, getting those trouble areas, you know, finding out where those problem weeds are and getting right in there and getting the roots out.
Would you say also, when you have got quite a large space, just break it up, just make smaller areas, make beds, and maybe think, okay, this year we'll do half of it,
and
we'll just get that bit nailed, get some beds built, or just delineate the area,
and
work on those sections.
Break it into little chunks, because I think if you stand at the end of an allotment and you think, oh my goodness, this is such a huge area, how am I going to manage it? Also, if there's one problem area, you know, some people often the boundaries are the difficult places, because, you know, if you've got somebody next door, or if the plot next door's not being used, then that's where the weeds will be coming in and you don't have any.
I think I'm that person.
You are the problem area. Oh dear. You know, that's often a place to kind of keep an eye on. And then, you know, once you've cleared your plot, then you just want to keep an eye on those boundaries so that things aren't coming in from next door.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's definitely a good tip. Break it into smaller chunks. So, you know, say, okay, what's the first job? When are you going to get your potatoes in? When are you going to do your winter salads and things? Are you going to do those things? You know, why don't you clear that area, work with that, and then that job's done, and then you move on to the next job. So, yeah.
It's a great time of year to sit down and plan.
Absolutely.
And dream and create in your
head.
Draw
out little plans. Make a list of jobs. You know, there's plenty of websites out there where you can get a kind of month-by-month list of jobs, and that's a really good way to guide yourself, you know, especially if you're learning. You know, if you've got fruit bushes, things like that, if you've got trees, little fruit trees need pruning now, you know, all of those jobs that you can really get a hold of and get them done. And then once it gets to February, March, when things start to grow back, you've already got that structure and you've got the framework. But I know what you mean, it can be a bit demoralizing, especially if you've just had your first year and it's all gone a bit pear-shaped and things didn't work as well as you were hoping.
Yeah, because we all have the dream. This is how TV destroys us.
Oh, it's awful.
Because they make it look so easy.
Yeah, ground force.
Oh, look at how amazing.
Crushed all our dreams.
Charlie Dimmock.
Yes. Oh, I know.
It's just Barty dressed as her once. Anyway.
I know what you didn't wear.
So. Well, I had fake.
I see. I get it.
Excellent. Yeah, but it is that, and we can be fed, and I think that did happen with allotments. There was a phase when they were extremely popular
and it looked like you just swanned up there for, you know, half an hour every Saturday with the children, and it was idyllic.
So you're living a self-sustaining life of vegetables.
With your Jules wellies, and you just potter about. Nobody tells you about the mounds of manure you've got to pile on everything, and the frozen fingers and toes and things.
Not to be too negative about it, because when it's really hard work, it is hard work, but once you're in it and you're doing it, it is incredibly satisfying as well.
Oh, it's wonderful.
But it's just maybe reducing expectation but mainly just expecting to have quite a painful back for a couple of days. Yeah.
Numb fingers and toes and a sore shoulders and
lower back issues.
Yeah.
So if you go in with that sort of expectation, then you'll come out winning.
Yeah. I think as well, I think people get, depending on where your allotment is, some allotments are under, more scrutiny than others. And I think people are always really worried about these weed orders and getting, but I think most allotment societies are pretty understanding. And if you've taken on a tough plot that's been that's not been looked after for several years, as long as you show willing and you're there often and you you're working and they can see what you're doing, they aren't going to want you off. They don't want abandoned plots. They don't want uninhabited places. So as long as you can show that you're working hard on one section, don't worry too much about the others. Maybe get a strimmer, strim things, keep things short,
You can always cover things.
Yeah, exactly. Cover stuff up. But yeah, don't worry too much about making it look perfect. Mm. It takes years to get it perfect.
It really does. It does. I think my plot's there just to help other people feel better.
You're the motivation.
Yeah.
You're the inspiration.
There's nothing more demoralising than being next to the best plot.
Oh, I know.
On the allotment
site. I'm the same. We're next to a guy who's had his his family have had his plot for 108 years.
What?
So it is, they've got 108 years of experience and weeding, and there's nothing you could possibly want.
That's incredible.
It's incredible. It really is. It's amazing. But and there's some other people up the road who are, a graphic designer and an architect, who are working together, and they're retired, and they just. They're there every day. Mm. And theirs is an absolute beautiful space to be in. So you're always slightly competing with people.
I know. But competition is the thief of joy. So it is about just...
like that. Competition is the thief of joy.
Comparison. Comparison is the thief of joy.
Oh, okay, yeah. Competition is maybe the motivator of joy.
Yes, competition is healthy. Okay, so the main points to take away for that is break it down. Mm-hmm. Don't try and do everything all at once. Do your planning stages now and just get into digging. Get your weeds under control.
Don't lose your mind.
And groundwork, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
small steps.
Getting up maybe early and going home early. Get up there as early as you can. Make sure you brought yourself plenty of snacks and stop for cups of tea.
Make it fun.
Enjoy it. Yeah, enjoy it. And don't go when it's absolutely pouring with rain. Don't do it when you feel like you don't want to. Go up there when you want to go.
Great. Second question. Mm-hmm. It's actually from the same person.
Oh, gosh,
thanks. Well, I'm very grateful.
Anyone else want to?
Anyone else? Yes.
Very welcome.
Very welcome.
We'll be here next year.
Because this show has this
all your winter gardening questions.
Because this show has veered off from gardening. I thought maybe initially that would be kind of the realm, but I've followed a different thread.
Yes,
but it is nice to talk about this as well, because for me, growing especially, I'm a big fan and I think it's really important.
Well, you've grown
and
a lot since I last saw you. Very tall.
Thanks. Good. And actually a theme that has come up almost in every show through so many different guises is bringing things down to a local level and just how that actually benefits everything. So when you're talking to people about wildlife, when you're talking to people about all sorts of different things, it's always like bee health, and it all comes back down to just doing things locally.
Yeah.
And globalisation hasn't done us any favours in that sense whatsoever. So I think growing is really important. And on that note, we're going to talk about tulips.
Very local.
But bulbs. Okay, so planting bulbs. Mm-hmm. We are told that they should go in September. Mm-hmm. If we had some left over, I often have them left over, actually.
Because
you just do. Planting bulbs is one of my least favourite activities.
And I always leave. I do everybody else's in September and October, and then I have a huge bag of things that I've thought, oh, these will be lovely in the spring, and I leave them till the end of December.
Yeah.
And I forget completely about them, and they're growing in their little bags.
And so with that, what would you suggest? What would you suggest to do with them? I'd say just wang them in to see what happens.
Definitely. It's definitely better to put them in at any point rather than leaving them in the bag. They will not do as well in the bag as they would do in the ground. That's basically a rule. It's hard to get them in the ground at the moment because it's a bit it's a bit frozen, so maybe it might be worth doing them in a pot. You know, if you've got them and they're already growing, you could put a nice load of, you know, compost. If you've got a compost heap, get a load of nice juicy compost, a bit of you know, maybe if you've got a bit of sort of some sort of nice fish blood and bone or something, just to give them a bit of feed, and then stick them in a pot. And then you can always transplant them, you know, in the spring after they've flowered. You could put them then into the ground.
Yes,
that might be a way
when
to
die back down.
Yeah,
again.
Exactly. Once the leaves have gone yellow and everything's sort of, yeah, that might be the best thing to do if you can't get them into the ground because the ground's too frozen. But yeah, definitely better to put them in.
Yeah,
have them, let them do a year.
Yeah, I think this is also another case of where you don't need to be too hard and fast about the rules of this stuff. You know, it's just, it's play. It is just playing.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's experimenting.
It doesn't
matter.
It's,
you know, it's
work.
Like science lessons, isn't it? It's like you're just playing and seeing what happens. It's it's all just trial and error, really, isn't it?
It is. It's trial and error. Well, Sophie, thank you for coming in.
Oh, you're welcome.
For
it's
your
been
winter
a delight.
Advice.
Thanks. Well, I'm going back out into the cold now.
So cold. And we'll see you at CD Sunday.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh, I'm really looking forward to that. That'd
are you gonna? Have you got anything in mind that you're after? Or
well, I am really keen to get. I'm really, really into all these sort of native British wildflowers at the moment. That's my kind of new thing. I've got a friend getting married in August, and she's quite keen to have, you know, native flowers in her. You know, in her bouquet and whatever. So I'd said I'd give that a go. So I'm looking around for that. But also, you know, anything interesting fruit and veg wise would be nice as well. So, yeah.
Cool. So 5th of February.
Yes.
Bazvic, CD Sunday.
Fantastic.
See you there.
See you there. Bye.
And that was Sophie. And thanks for coming in, Sophie. It's always a pleasure. Okay, so we're coming to the end of the show. If you do have a question, whether it be gardening related or just any sort of comment about the show, then please do get in touch. You can find me on radioreverb.com. If you find the Growing Wild show page on there, there's some contact details there. Or I am on Twitter at Growing Wild FM, and the same for Instagram at Growing Wild FM. So do get in touch. It's always a pleasure to hear from people. And I'm going to play us out with the song. I spent some time up in the Highlands this month and it was absolutely glorious, and I've not been to Scotland before, and it was my first exploration, and it was just so brilliant. I couldn't believe how gorgeous it was. I mean, I spent some time in New Zealand and then I went to Scotland. I was like, why on earth did I go to New Zealand? It's just actually better here. And I had a little gallivant around on some islands and generally just sort of skipped around like a little mountain goat, and it's absolutely my thing that we should get out and walk in the winter. It's completely beautiful, and the skies that we have at this time of year, and we've been so lucky this last month with the dawns and the sunsets have just been completely glorious. So as ever, I just encourage you to go outside and have a little play around. Maybe you could do the bird thing that we talked about earlier, or just have a nice stroll, or get an allotment, why not? And because of my love, my newfound love of Scotland, I'm going to play us out with Flower of Scotland, because I was actually listening to this as I was trotting about and I just think it's brilliant. So this is Flower of Scotland. I'm Charlotte Petts. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll be back again next month. Go well.